The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's August the 2nd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. Just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at today's agricultural weather forecast. And in between, we'll hear from former U.S. Secretary of Transportation Rodney Slater. He worked for the Clinton administration and now serves as the chair of an organization that supports alternative fuels like ethanol, but that also has member companies like General Motors. We'll take up the CAFE standards legislation that is working its way through Washington, D.C. as part of the energy discussion. Slater wants higher miles per gallon standards for cars in the U.S., but says Detroit and farm country need a little extra time, like a couple more years, to get the job done. It all happens on this Thursday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report. In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. September wheat at 5 3/4 higher, 641 3/4 was the settlement price. December futures at 663 1/2 were up 7.5 cents. September corn futures, $3.24, were a nickel higher. December futures at 341 1/4, up 5 1/4. And the March futures up a nickel at 356 1/4. December contract, 392 1/2, up 4 3/4 for the day. August soybean futures, $8.31, up 5 1/4. September futures up 5 3/4 at $8.38 1/4. And November beans at 854 1/2 were up 5 3/4 for this year. Next year's November's at 892 were up 3 1/2 for the day. August bean meal futures at 217.90, up 260. August bean oil, 14 higher at 37.43. August live cattle futures were down 50 cents at 92.92 1/2, and the October futures at 98.15 were down 65. August feeder cattle, $1.05 lower at 115.92 1/2, and September futures there at 116.35 were down $1.05. Lean hog futures at 73.12 1/2 finished the day 80 cents higher. From the crude oil pits now, September contract in the outside markets at $76.91 a barrel, finished 38 cents higher at this hour. And the trade in the Dow at 13,389 is currently 27 points higher for the day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace and what you saw today.
Well, I suppose today's finishes may be a little disappointing to the technician because we did kind of settle back and close near session lows, or at least the regular session lows. But we still manage nickel higher closes basically on corn and soybeans and wheat, if not maybe a little bit more in the wheat. So we did close higher for the day. The catalyst, of course, for the recovery rally, it was kind of led by corn last night, was the F.C. Stone crop estimate, which put the national average yield at somewhere around 148. I think for the most part, the trade is thinking the yield may be somewhere between 153 and 156. We're going to have Infoma economics going to come out, I think, tomorrow morning. And the last time they came out in July, they had like 156.5 or something like that. So based upon the crop rating declines that we saw during the month of July, one would expect them to come downward. The key will be, do they come down to FC Stone's level or still stay in the 150s or so? So I think that's what the trade's kind of looking at here for tomorrow. The other thing here, we had excellent corn export sales for both corn and wheat, basically double, I think, what the trade was looking at. We had about $70 million on corn and $64 million on wheat. So that gave us some good fundamental underlining support. And we're still not out of the weather market. We got model disagreements and nervousness about whether or not we'll get some rain here next week. It does look like the northern Corn Belt will pick up some rain. It's questionable what the lower half of the Corn Belt is going to pick up in the eastern half.
As you take a look at the charts, it appears that December corn on the composite and the pit trade both has been flirting a bit with the 20-day moving average, but it can't seem to close above it. Do you think Informa will give it enough of a push tomorrow to do that, or will they come up with a big number?
That's the answer. I don't know. I look at the trend line on corn. December corn futures punched above that trend line, the downtrend line that we've had from that I think middle part of July high, and then the decline that we had here into last week. Now, we did break above that. We do have some momentum and price divergences on the December corn futures chart. Even though today's closes are a little disappointing, I think the breakout above that trend line still remains in play, but we do need to have some fundamental push behind it to take it on up. And, of course, a low Informa number would probably do that tomorrow. Soybeans, same way. They've broke above a one-third speed line that you draw off of the chart. So looks like we've got a break out on to the upside on the soybeans. But this is a time of year that's hard to get something going without a weather extreme and or a shock out of the August crop report. But I think both charts are kind of set up anyway. The door has been open for a rally or a recovery rally of some kind. The question is there going to be a fundamental event come along to kind of warrant such a move?
And when you take a look at the numbers from FC Stone, and let's delve into those just a bit more. Yield at 148 USDA in July at 150.3. That puts FC Stone at 12.644 billion bushels for total production for the year. USDA is current at 12.84 billion bushels. Can you play with a number that's quite that low at 148 nationally?
Well, August crop reports are hard to kind of get your arms around, and that's why so many times they're a surprise. I was probably in the camp of something above 150 based upon the crop rating levels that I was hearing coming out of the USDA until I took a look at total July precip amounts in the Corn Belt. And outside of, that Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Quad Cities, Galesburg, Peoria area, which definitely looked to be the garden spot if precip amounts have anything to say with crop prospects. But once you get outside of that area, the July precip totals are quite light in many areas. So I think it's real important here that we get a good rain fairly soon here, at least in the next 10 days or so, or otherwise, I think a yield down underneath, 150 is definitely in play. So I wouldn't necessarily disagree with the FC Stone number, at least looking at just raw precip data for the month of July.
So you'd be looking at lighter ear weights, you think, in that case?
Well, that's the problem is I don't think USDA will necessarily reflect that. I think on the August number, they're likely to use an average ear weight. And then from what I understand, talking to producers anyway, the population levels are quite high. We've got good stands and high populations, so that would make me a little nervous, I guess, or I'd brace myself for maybe a, a number bigger than what I think is actually out there in the field on the August report, and it'll be interesting to see how the market reacts to something like that, if that is the case.
No, so your supposition here is that USDA will come in with a large number, but if we don't get the rains, that large number will actually drop.
Yeah, I think they'll forget about it. I mean, I think it's real important that we get some rains here by the early part of next week. Like I think the GSF model or whatever is indicating some pretty good rains next week. If we don't get those rains, I think the trade would probably discount August 1 condition crop estimates and figure whatever USDA comes at us that is probably a lower number. But you know, if the rains come, then that's a little different story.
All right. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Very well.
And that's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Tuesday afternoons. Just to recap the numbers as they were released from F.C. Stone yesterday afternoon, 148 for the average yield nationally on the corn with a 12.644 billion bushel crop. F.C. Stone puts the soybean average at 42.4 bushels to the acre. That's up from the 41.5 from the USDA in July. Total crop size at 2.681 billion bushels. It also is bigger than what USDA had projected at 2.625. A quick look at the forecast for the two-state region from Mike Zola. He says in northern and western Illinois, becoming mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms possible. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows will range from 62 in northwestern Illinois to 70 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. A few thunderstorms may develop in the afternoon, mainly in southwestern Illinois. Highs will range from 84 in northwestern Illinois to 95 in the far south.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by former Secretary of Transportation Rodney Slater under the Clinton administration. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Todd. It's good to be on your show.
Let's talk about what you're up to now. You're involved in an organization called Driving America's Future. You're the chair and the voice of the organization, and it's looking towards conservation of fuel.
It is, and it seeks to really help the broader community come to grips with the fact that as a nation, we've got to wean ourselves of foreign oil, and we have to look at alternative fuels. We have to look at the development of alternative vehicles. And frankly, we've got to communicate with decision makers both at the local, state, and national level when it comes to addressing policy issues that could impact the automotive industry, but also because of the leadership role that the farming community is playing in this regard, the farming community as well, as the nation deals with its energy independence needs.
So that everybody is on the same page. We know that the coalition is made up of several national organizations and some locals as well. The national include the American Corn Growers Association, not to be confused with the National Corn Growers Association, America's Independent Truckers Association, and General Motors. You are talking about policy this week. There's a great deal happening with energy policy in Washington, D.C. as it deals with H.R. 6 and the CAFE standards. Those are the corporate average fuel economy standards.
That's right.
I think they're at 27.5,
yeah.
And they're looking to push those higher. Tell me more about it.
Yes. The Congress is, in fact, engaged. Really, as we speak, Todd, they're trying to finish a major energy bill in the House before they recess for the August recess. And they've just decided, though, that it's not likely that the CAFE issue would be a part of that debate in the short term. But clearly, when they come back and they try to reconcile the House bill and the Senate bill, which has a CAFE provision, this will definitely be a part of that discussion. You laid out the definition of CAFE, and your listeners should know that it's a standard that's been around now for about 30, 35 years. It was established in the mid-70s in response to the oil embargo at that time and also the resulting high fuel costs. Today, we face a similar challenge in that we've got turbulence in parts of the world where we depend on oil, whether that's in the Middle East or parts of Africa. And we've seen a spike in gasoline prices. We've also got something that we didn't have in the mid-70s, and that is a recognition of the growing concern about climate change and carbon emissions and the like. And so the country is really coming to grips with how it has to reconcile its energy needs with its security concerns, be they energy security concerns or economic security concerns. And again, the Congress is very much involved in this debate. It is true that the CAFE standard today is about 27.5 miles per gallon for passenger vehicles and 22.2 miles per gallon for light trucks. The Senate bill would increase that amount to 35 miles per gallon by the year 2020. The Senate bill would also combine the regulation for light trucks and passenger cars, meaning that they would both, even though they're quite different in construction, be governed by the same standard, which is not what current law is. Current law recognizes the distinction between the two vehicles and notes that light trucks have to be a bit heavier for towing capacity, cargo capacity, and really used by a lot of farmers and many, many individuals across the country who need that extra strength, towing capacity and cargo capacity. And so the House bill that, again, is not going to be considered at this time, but one that is supported by Driving America's Future, is House Bill 2927. It's a bipartisan measure. It would also raise the CAFE standard, but would do so over a slightly longer period of time so that the automotive industry could continue to invest in alternative fuels. The second thing that would be a difference is that it would maintain the current law when it comes to having a separate regulation miles per gallon standard for light trucks and for passenger cars.
And it would raise it and over a longer period of time. What's the period of time?
The period of time, it's really not much longer, Todd. It's actually 2022. So it's just 2 years longer than the Senate bill. But again, a significant increase. We say that it's an aggressive increase. It is, and it's bold. But it's balanced because it does allow the automotive industry to continue to invest in the alternative fuels. And again, I think that states like Illinois, Kentucky, my home state of Arkansas, Missouri, and others can really play a lead role when it comes to the development of alternative fuels. And I've mentioned Illinois. I should mention Indiana as well, because there are a lot of biofuel facilities that are being established in both of those states, and I know that you've got listeners in both of those states.
Yeah, are we at 35 miles to the gallon on the cars and 32 on the trucks in this bill? Is that correct?
Well, it's no lower than 32 and no higher than 35.
So your suggestion here is that this is gives the auto industry a little longer to put these things in place.
Exactly.
Is it also the fact that it gives the farm community, the agricultural community, more time to develop its side with efficiency for use of ethanol?
Well, and that's true, because what we're trying to do is to get farmers really to, in their crop rotation and as they think about their own use of valuable acreage, we want them to invest more in corn, wheat, soybeans, and some of the other products that can be used for ethanol, wheatgrass, switchgrass, I'm sorry, sugarcane, and the like. And also, I do think even here, over time, we will be able to get a better yield from the acreage that is currently being used and would be added. But we've just got to do a little more work. And I'm really excited about our institutions of higher education being involved in this effort, our labs working in partnership with the auto industry. And this industry itself is spending in the neighborhood of $16 to $17 billion annually on research and development, and a lot of that is in partnership with universities. And I know that you're connected with the University of Illinois, and I know again that there's a lot of focus on the Illini bioenergy effort that is underway, and hopefully will be fully in production soon. So I do think that the extra time would be most helpful to the farming community as well as to the automotive industry as well. But it's not an open-ended deadline. It is still a significant deadline. We're being very aggressive here, but not overly so, as is the case, we think, with the Senate bill that's currently before the Congress.
And former Secretary Slater, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye
now.
Bye-bye. That's former Secretary of Transportation under the Clinton administration, Rodney Slater. He is the current chair of Driving America's Future. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Time now for our Thursday look at the cash grain market. Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the cash price of corn this afternoon. I was looking at the average yesterday, about a dime, 12 cents below $3. And do you think we can expect that to be the case as we go right into harvest season?
Oh, I think we're going to see the volatility pick up over the next week or so as we get into the prior to the report. I think we're, that's probably a reasonable expectation to think that we're going to stay 20 cents on either side of that $3 mark probably for a while.
And what did you make of the action in Chicago today?
Well, I think there's a pretty good reaction to the stone number. That was kind of a surprise. I'd looked at that yesterday evening a little bit on a state-by-state basis, and it's really hard to have a lot of argument. They've got Illinois, you know, close to the record yields of 2004, and Iowa about like last year, and Minnesota down substantially, and Ohio down. So, you know, it looks reasonable from what, you know, as Dan was saying, what the weather and the rainfall amounts have been.
The fall off in Minnesota could be problematic, I would think, for the supply side of the marketplaces. This is one of the first years that really the whole of demand was looking for that state to produce a lot of corn.
Yeah, we could see some unusual movement here this year with the central part of the belt with good yields in some of the western, northwestern areas and the Ohio area. Not very good yield. We could see some movement that we haven't seen.
So you're talking about train values and trains going to the west.
Yeah, that's possible. It won't happen for a while because you will have enough corn to, you know, meet demand for the first part of the year.
It's been a while since we've had a rain here in central Illinois. How are things holding on where you are?
Oh, they still look very good. Corn's, you know, moving along and we could possibly see some harvest, I think, in 40 days down the road, something like that after Labor Day. So it looks good. We could sure use a shower, though.
And the values for the basis change much in the last 2 days?
No, really. The corn was slightly better through the week. Processors were a little bit better. On the beans, we're in the process here of moving from the versus the August to versus the November, and as they've done that, they haven't taken the full 24-cent spread there. So basis has really improved pretty significantly on the beans this week.
And what are your bids for the day?
$2.94 on the cash corn, $7.59 on beans.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Bill Mayer with Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here in the closing mark report that happens on Thursday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agriculture weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt. The regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The loss of Motorola in Champaign is leading to the arrival of Yahoo.
The internet company has announced plans to set up an office in the Champaign-Urbana area, employing about 100 people. Yahoo's Vice President of Operations, Kevin Timmons, says many of those workers could come from the staff of Motorola's cell phone research facility, which is closing by the end of the month. There's no word what the office's specific responsibility will be. Timmons says Yahoo's looking at several locations, including the U of I Research Park. A civil engineering professor at the U of I says yesterday's bridge collapse in Minneapolis is a symptom of an underlying problem with aging infrastructure. Robert Dodd says many of the nation's interstate bridges are in the range of 40 to 50 years old. He says, though, the investigation into what caused the Minneapolis collapse has barely begun. Bridges are susceptible to wear, and their complexity makes them especially difficult to inspect. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says the collapse raises concerns about possible problems with Illinois bridges. Durbin says he's sure federal agencies will be inundated with requests for information, and he says he wants to be sure to get on the list. Governor Rob Blagojevich has ordered a visual inspection of all Illinois bridges designed like the one that collapsed, as well as those that carry heavy traffic or are under construction. Presidential hopeful Barack Obama calls using nuclear weapons a profound mistake and says it isn't an option that he would consider in the war against terrorists. The Illinois Democrat today was asked if there was any circumstance in which he would be prepared or willing to use nuclear weapons to defeat terrorism and al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. The lease is up on the big blue bus that Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels has used for official non-political trips around the state since he took office 2 years ago. With Daniels running for re-election, a spokeswoman says the governor's decided to return the 40-foot-long RV to its manufacturer rather than risk ethical questions about whether the vehicle was being used for political purposes. Using the vehicle, dubbed RV1, cost Indiana nothing for the first 2 years, but Daniels spokeswoman Jane Jankowski says it's cost taxpayers $600 a month since February. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're joined by Pete Levitt to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. He's a meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about weather in the Midwest.
Well, in the Midwest, we have a little rocky start to the weekend, so some light showers getting into the northern portions of the state. I don't think they'll penetrate very far south, but it'll keep things seasonal and temperature-wise and not very hot through about Sunday. But then the heat is on. I think we start to dry out. The front will stay north of us next week as a ridge builds across the central and eastern part of the U.S., and that'll keep us on the hazy, hot, and humid side for the most of the balance of next week. But I don't think there's a moisture problem, and I'm not looking for any excessive heat. But it's the dog days of summer are coming. As far as the Western Corn Belt is concerned, they will get some beneficial showers over the next 72 hours. Two fronts, a weak one first, and then the major one late Saturday and Sunday will generate showers across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, areas which could use the rain. Those are the dry areas. So otherwise, it doesn't look too bad, just as typical summer weather.
You say the heat is on. We're up to, what, about 91 degrees on the heat index today. 88 degrees is the outside temperature. We're talking about higher than that?
Yeah, I think we'll get to see some triple digits in a few spots, especially downstate next week as the temperatures get up into the mid-90s. And that's usually good for, getting the heat index up there. The longer range, by the way, we're not looking for this to be extending month-wise. It's still looking at the same pattern, ridge in the west, trough in the east type of pattern aloft. And that'll start to bring things back to normal, I think, when we get into mid-month.
Yeah, back to normal, but that means that they'll stay dry in the western part of the Corn Belt and Minnesota won't get a drink?
Yo, Minnesota will. They'll get these showers before it gets dry, and then the front is lying across the northern tier of state, so they will get the rain up there and they can use it. And especially Saturday and Sunday, I think there's some pretty good showers coming across northern Iowa and much of Minnesota and into Wisconsin. So I think they will improve, and everywhere else there's enough moisture to hang in there.
Oh, that's an entirely different story. What kind of rainfall do you expect there?
Oh, I expect a half to 1.5 inches of rain in some of the heavier spots, pretty close along the I-90 corridor there, I think, would be the axis of the best precipitation for this period.
So the heat is on for us next week, but if you go to the South America, it's been pretty chilly.
Right, right. And that's another interesting thing. It's giving problems for the Argentine wheat to some extent. They're a little concerned in southern Brazil in wheat production. And they've had some heavy showers in Sao Paulo State to the north, but that's a sugarcane problem for them. And the cold weather may be getting too cold for some of the tropical crops next week, so I would keep an eye on that.
Okay, we appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And Pete Levitt is a meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens on Thursday afternoons. Don't forget to join us again tomorrow morning at 8:49. That for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening commodity market report, and that you can listen to most of the ag programming on the web at willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.